Well, hello and welcome to the Confused Breakfast. Do you remember the pure joy of a trip to the video rental store as a kid?
Yeah.
Mm. It's hard to beat the ease of the modern era and streaming platforms where you don't even have to leave your house. There was something truly special about celebrating a successful school council campaign by heading to Blockbuster, picking out a movie by hand, and taking it home to watch. Mm. On this podcast, we revisit and dissect some of our favorite childhood movies from that magical era to see if they still move us the way they did as kids. My name is Mike Schulte. Joining me, as always, if they died right now, I would throw myself into one of my dad's cement trucks and get poured into their tomb. Sean Pryor and AJ Venz, how the heck are you?
It's very romantic.
Everything okay?
Mm-mm.
Okay.
Mm-mm. Straight up? No, it's not.
No.
Put on a happy face, man. Well, my dudes, on today's episode, we discuss one of the greatest high school movies of all time.
Sure.
A cynical story that was nominated for an Oscar and inspired the popular TV series Glee. We are, of course, talking about 1999's Election.
Yeah.
Well, damn dang it. Ladies and gentlemen, it's time for another nostalgic journey to the past with the Confused Breakfast. Sit back, relax, and enjoy. Wherever you are in the world. Take it away, boys.
The cymbal hit on the snare is very underrated.
Yeah.
Yeah, the go past the downbeat to then hit the downbeat.
Well, and I'm just saying to mute that on beat.
Yeah, dude, beat.
Yeah, cool. So, hey, if you're new to this podcast, we will be reviewing Election scene by scene with a modern eye. But in order to do that properly, we feel that we have to talk about it nostalgically first so that we can bring it up and then we can sweep it under the rug. So, Sean, let's start with you. Tell us the first time you saw this movie, what your nostalgic rating was.
I saw this movie because it was recommended to me through a podcast I really like called Pure Cinema Podcast. Host Elric Kane on there is a kind of kindred spirit of mine, I would say. He said that he liked Alexander Payne movies, but he's kind of making more Oscar baity films nowadays. And so he said everyone needs to check out Election because it's kind of raunchy and it's kind of got some bite to it and some attitude. And I'm like, okay, I like that. So Reese Witherspoon and some Matthew Broderick. I loved it when I first saw it. I'd have to give it probably a 7.5.
7.5 means love for Sean. AJ, what about you, man?
No, there was this, I think just going through the whole, I've never seen this movie, guys. I can't even ad lib on this right now. I can't riff. I never saw it. Like, this is, but if I had to say anything, this is probably the reason why is because this is the start of like when I like started not liking Matthew Broderick.
Yeah, okay.
I had seen a lot of stuff prior to this that came out. Some came out ahead, some came out after. Well, Ferris Bueller, War Games. That was like my Matthew Broderick.
But then you're getting like Cable Guy, Election Matthew Broderick.
And it's just kind of that he's playing this kind of lame everyman kind of a guy, you know. And
he's like Ben Stiller before Ben Stiller. That role kind of.
Yeah, and you're just, it's like, man, okay. But, you know, it's like Jason Bateman. Mm-hmm. Jason Bateman does this a lot too. And I feel like we'll get into it. But never seen it, guys. And I'm excited to talk about it.
Let you borrow my Blu-ray. You probably don't even remember me letting you borrow it.
I don't.
Did he keep it and never give it back?
He kept it for like years. And
did it ever come back to you?
Oh, I got it. I just had to take it
you
back.
Probably had to just steal it out of my place wherever.
Hey, AJ, can I borrow your copy of Election? Yeah, sure, man.
Oh, yeah, dude. I didn't even know I had that.
Let me know what you think when you check it out.
AJ, I'm the exact same as you on this one. Like, I was not a Matthew Broderick fan.
And such a piece of shit.
Yeah, well, that's fine. That's why I was trying to keep going because I didn't want you to feel self-loathing.
I appreciate it.
No, I was not a Matthew Broderick fan. And first of all, I hated the cover. I think this cover art should have been better.
It's weird.
It did no justice for this film. And I was smack dab in the middle of high school when I did see this. And I didn't know at the time that like my teachers could be evil yet. I hadn't quite learned that. I learned it later on in life
that
when I found out some bullshit that was going on.
People.
Yeah, I found out some bullshit that was going on in my school after the fact. But I didn't know that yet, and I thought this was a high school movie. It's not a high school movie. It's not for high schoolers. It's for adults to sort of look back on it. And so I hated it. I was a four. I watched it one time, like, fuck, I'm never watching that movie again. So
God forbid I have to talk about it on a podcast someday.
Well, luckily, our executive producer, Starling, said, this is my choice, and you must watch this, and we must review it.
Let's do it.
Fuck yeah, buddy.
Starling says, thank you for reviewing one of the top 20 movies I've seen the most. This movie came out right after college when I started my love of seeing movies in theaters for the first time, not just Blockbuster. When Election came out in 99, it was a foregone conclusion that I, along with all my friends, were going to see this. Why? Two words, Cruel Intentions. That movie spawned a new genre of movies, TV, and reality shows. Cruel Intentions crawled so Mean Girls and the CW network could run.
Definitely.
Pretty people with limited ethics and morals, but a shit ton of cash equals entertainment gold. With Election, we got to see Reese go from the goody two-shoes character in Intentions, but adding intense drive and ambition to become Tracy Flick. I understand her motivation and relate it on some level. It's interesting looking back that Reese's movies run in the late 90s goes from high school slut trope in Pleasantville, which was also fun, to devolving into a naive high schooler with Tracy. This was a fun movie era for me, and it was a solid 8.5 at the time.
Nice.
So if you look at our nostalgic rating, kids, we're a 6.66.
Oh, let's go, dude.
And if you if you put that against any other, actually, this is very fun. If you put that against any movie we've done so far, nostalgically, that ties with Beetlejuice, also at a 6.66. Okay. So this all makes a lot of sense.
That makes a ton of sense.
A lot of sense.
Check out that new trailer, dogs. All right.
But we are going to strip that away. We are going to talk about this with a modern eye. So we got to go to Sean, learn all the important details of the movie. Sean, what do you got?
Oh, yeah. Produced by Ron Yerxa, Keith Samples, David Gale, and Albert Berger. Screenplay by Alexander Payne and Jim Taylor. Music by, it was actually based off a novel by Tom Peretta. Music by Rolf Kent. He also did Legally Blonde, Mean Girls, Sideways, and Wedding Crashers. Fun. Cinematography by James Glennon. Also did Fly the Navigator. Directed by Alexander Payne. Also did Sideways, About Schmidt, Nebraska, and the recent The Holdovers, which I am dying to see. Cast: Matthew Broderick, Reese Witherspoon, Chris Klein, Phil Reeves, Mark Herlick, Delaney Driscoll, Molly Hagan, Colleen Camp, Jessica Campbell, and Holmes Osborne. Producers Albert Berger and Ron Yerxa had acquired a manuscript of an unpublished novel by the name of Election and thought that director Alexander Payne's sensibilities would suit well for the kind of tone in the novel. Payne was reluctant because he was not interested in a high school movie, but when he read the manuscript, he was delighted. It wasn't much of a high school movie, rather a political thriller slash comedy set in high school. The director was also very interested in the different character perspectives of the film. The novel was inspired by the 1992 presidential election where Ross Perot entered as a third-party candidate and in an incident at a Wisconsin high school in which a pregnant student was made to be prom queen, but the staff of the school burned some of the votes for her. Pretty fucked.
Jeez.
Election shot in Omaha, Nebraska, and Papillion La Vista Senior High School served as the fictitious Carver High School in the film. Election was released on April 23rd, 1999, and on a budget of $8.5 to $25
million.
It's estimated. Nobody really knows how much money was spent.
That's an estimation. No, it's not.
So
how much money did the Confused Breakfast make in 2023 at the podcast? Estimated $5 to $100 million.
Somewhere around there.
We just don't know. The numbers haven't come in.
And so the money that they make off it can either be a success or a complete bomb because it made $17.2 million.
We don't know.
So who knows? It was nominated for the Best Adapted Screenplay at the Oscars and Best Actress for Reese Witherspoon at the Golden Globes.
Reese Witherspoon.
She's got it, this picture. She's not without it.
Rither. Okay.
Okay, thanks, Sean. Up next, we got to go to AJ. We got to do some research. We got to learn about ratings and reviews from critics and fans alike. How you feeling on this one?
Dude, I guess we're just going to have to go into the tomato meter. There's no red references in this, and there's food fight tomato meter. Great. How about that?
Maybe like the red ink from a teacher's pen on your homework.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The only thing redder than the... red ink from that F we got.
Yeah,
I got it.
There you go.
One thing you got to know about Rotten Tomatoes is that it gets so red.
So red. Mm. Tomatoes are red, guys, in case you didn't know. Sometimes they're green. 92%. Wow. This is not green. Certified fresh.
That's just piles into last week's movie. That was also a 92. That ties with Pulp Fiction.
Wow.
Per the critics.
Okay.
Critic consensus on this. Every now and again, I like to interject these. Election successfully combines dark humor and intelligent writing in this very witty and enjoyable film. The audience, not quite on board. They're at a 79%.
Yep.
It's the burp. I tried to suppress it so hard. Okay. Sorry, guys. Mouth farts. 7.3 on IMDb.
This is a fun one. This ties with Big, Raising Arizona, and Starship Troopers of any movie we've done.
Okay. God. Some reason that feels right.
That's kind of why I picked those out. I'm like, man, especially Starship
Satire
Troopers.
Satire. Yeah.
Like, wow, this is kind of fun.
I think it's perfect. Government. Let's talk about government, guys, and apply it to different scenarios. And speaking of commentary, yep. Washington Post, Dessen Thompson, we gave it 100 out of 100. Actually, it could be 100 out of 10. We don't know.
Perfect movie.
Perfect movie, according to Dessen. The satire of the season, a hilarious razor-sharp indictment of the American dream. Well done.
Nice.
Jay Carr also gave it 100. He said, from the Boston Globe, an invigoratingly mordant comedy that proves that Alexander Payne's rebunctiousness debut, Citizen Ruth, was not a fluke. I don't know what Citizen Ruth was.
It's the prequel to Citizen Kane.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. The prequel?
Yeah, the one before, yep.
So they came back and like, we need to know more about Citizen Kane's background.
You should check it out. It's real good.
Ruth.
Rosebud really puts it in perspective once you go back and watch that movie.
Rosebud's a reference to the anus, I believe, for Citizen Kane, right? There's a sled. Sorry, I get those two mixed up. Guys, 70 out of 100. Bill Gallo, Dallas Observer. happily
let
this.
Let him sit in it.
Turn filth. Bill Gallo, he said, happily this irreverent, sharply observant comedy sweeps us into the maelstrom, too. Amid the glut of the teen movies rolling out the studios every week, Election deserves special attention.
Nice.
It was a 70. That was the lowest thing I saw on there. But we can go lower.
The fans.
We know.
I deserve special attention too in high school.
Yes. Uh-oh. I'm sorry. 1 out of 10. Well, I thought it was a halfway fun movie until...
What part?
Warning, spoilers. This is in 2020. No one was having a good time then. January 2020. Until they find the missing votes in the trash.
Wait. So I was having a great time, but then they found the missing votes in the trash, and then the entire movie became complete garbage to where it's a one.
Literally garbage.
Yeah, whoa.
Man, we're good at this. So he said, I mean, even the stupidest person in the world would have done something smarter than that. It just turned me so totally off that I skipped the rest of the movie. Well,
it was kind of the end anyway. So
we're pretty close.
Yeah.
You saw most of it. We were just waiting for, you know, any sort of, you know, come around for the characters.
I'm used to my movies, the characters in my movies being perfect, pitch perfect human beings.
Never making mistakes.
Absolutely non-fallible at all.
Yeah. That was it. 6 out of 15 people found that very helpful. 1 out of 10. No ethics at all. 2018. A high school teacher. Oh, what? Warning, spoilers.
Oh, excuse us.
A high school teacher who was always talking about morals and ethics should not have ended being such a failure. The movie was pointless and there is no moral at the end. In addition, I could not find any point to laugh at either. So it should not be categorized under the comedy genre.
Oh.
Thank you. Thank you for telling us that you
We were trying to find a comedy and we almost hit play and you told us that it's not a comedy, so we didn't pick it.
This is ridiculous. You told me this is a comedy and I got it strictly because you said this was a comedy.
What is it to you?
What would
you classify this movie?
Trash.
Trash?
Yeah.
Garbage.
Anus.
Anus. Rosebud. That's fine, guys.
It is, yeah, it is.
Yeah.
Keep it going.
We're good. We're respected film critics. It's
we are. This is, this is a fun one, guys. Actually, this is an 8 out of 10. We all knew a Tracy flick. 2020. I think this movie captures the classic stereotypes: overachiever, jock, sexually confused, a troubled teen. I so wanted Tracy flick to get hers. I guess the movie tried to show that nobody's perfect and life isn't always fair.
Okay.
You got it.
Thank you for grasping.
You got it.
Thank you. Yeah, I know. That laid it out pretty well. Actually, that's, I think, in the context, guys, this is what we would normally call, like, hey, that's a great review.
Good review.
Because that was an 8 out of 10. We all knew a Tracy flick. And then, you know, they did a great job capturing this. And turns out, yeah, life isn't always fair. It's great.
Move on with my life.
And there we go.
All right. We successfully talked about Election.
Off of that, I can either choose to watch it or not based on my own feelings, you know? So, yeah, that's what it is.
Not how it works.
Oh, shit. That's not how IMDb works.
Yes.
How about just one more? Not funny, not sexy, just awful.
Who said it was supposed to be sexy?
No.
The trailer's like,
there's a cute blonde girl comedy in it.
You know what? Xeno Dad, 1999, thought it was supposed to be sexy. Xeno Dad is sitting there like, this isn't sexy.
High school is supposed to be sexy.
I thought this was supposed to be a high school movie that's sexy.
He's sitting cool down intentions in his basement with a crate full of porno, just like Matthew Broderick is.
He opens up his porno case and Elections.
That's
I'm removing that
stash
from the porno.
That's not classified here anymore. I'll put that back on the shelf for the kids to watch.
Ooh, I better look inside of that VHS, make sure it's the right tape.
Yeah.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah.
Sanitized.
The movie was a real disappointment. The humor is spread very thin, interrupted by lots and lots of sex scenes. Gratuitous, implicit sex abounds, but nothing erotic is involved. Damn it!
I didn't get a boner once.
It's ridiculous. Believe me, I'm no prude. You sure? But how many sex scenes do you need in a movie less than 2 hours long? There's a lesbian scene, a teacher-student scene, an adultery scene, a fellatio scene, a porno movie viewing scene, and two belabored marital sex scenes. Not one of them is the least bit erotic.
Cool.
What was the point?
Humans have sex, buddy.
There is
turns
human.
Turns out sex isn't like pornos in real life. Weird.
He thought he was like getting away with this. Like he didn't want to go to that section of the movie store this time around. So he decided to find like what's kind of supposed to be erotic. Ugh. Yeah, this will get me going. Election. Well, politics.
I misread the title. I thought it said erection.
This guy watches porno and expects everyday life to be like that. Like yes. When I was single, I never once walked into a room and a girl was stuck in my washing machine.
Nope.
That's
once.
Never happened to me once.
Not once. I've tried to get smaller washing machines. It never works, guys.
Sorry, it doesn't work.
There is humor, but not enough. The plot is thin, predictable, and pointless. A real disappointment all the way. Because he couldn't get all the way. Never mind. It's fine. The joke's been made.
Microdose. It's the first thing that hit my brain when I watched this movie. There are some characters here who could really benefit from microdosing. All sorts of people in the world are microdosing to feel healthier, to feel happier, and to perform better. Microdosing is equivalent to getting into the zone, the just right feeling that you crave, those perfect moments when your body and mind are relaxed and at peace. After a few experiences with gummies where I couldn't handle the high doses, I was super reluctant to try them again. But thankfully, microdose came into our world with the dosage that I needed to be able to jump back in and take advantage of the amazing benefits. I'm one of those guys who works really hard during the day and at night. I just want a small little buzz to be able to relax before bed. Instead of reaching for a case of beer or a bottle of wine, I've been popping a microdose gummy and I can't even tell you how great of a decision it's been. This product has a ton of benefits. People have reported that it relieves anxiety, pain, or muscle tension, that it spices up sex and intimacy, that it helps people fall asleep and stay asleep. And it
can even help with your focus and creativity. For me, it's relaxation and living in the moment. It's so hard for me to turn off my brain. I'm always reaching for my phone, but with Microdose, I've been able to sit, relax, leave my phone in the other room, and just enjoy the moment. A tiny dose of THC does wonders, and you need to try it. I can't recommend it more. The best part about this product is you can take an extremely small dose just to feel the microdosing effects without feeling impaired. It's great for beginners, but you can also take a larger dose if you're an expert and looking for the full send. That's why Microdose is a game changer. Get 30% off your first order plus free shipping today at microdose.com, promo code BREAKFAST, and it's available nationwide. That's microdose.com, promo code BREAKFAST for 30% off and free shipping. Microdose.com, promo code breakfast.
Well, boys, poet Henry David Thoreau once wrote, "I cannot make my days longer, so I strive to make them better." Mm-hmm. With this podcast, we here at The Confused Breakfast, we also have an opportunity to make our podcast listening better. Since we started this podcast, I've spoken with many of you about your concerns. I spoke to Peter Fitz, and he feels like our episodes are too long. I spoke to Jarrett Layoff, and he's worried that the fame is getting to our heads.
Yeah.
I want you to know that I care about The Confused Breakfast, and I care about each and every one of you. And together, we can make a difference. So when you cast your vote for The Confused Breakfast at the Iowa Podcast Awards, you won't just be voting for us. You'll be voting for yourself and for every other Confused Breakfast listener. Our podcast may be getting shorter, but they're also getting better. Thank you, and here we go.
They're here.
All right. Bravo, bravo, bravo,
bravo, bravo, bravo.
So scene one, Jim McAllister is a much-admired high school history teacher. One morning, he sees a student named Tracy Flick, who is an overachiever running for student council president. We flash back to earlier in the year to learn that another teacher, Jim's best friend Dave Novotny, was fired from his job and divorced by his wife Linda after it came out that he and Tracy were having a sexual affair.
Oh, boy. I do love, right off the bat, the mundanity of Broderick's character mixed with the fast cutting of Tracy's routine, yep. Like of getting ready and her all posts and everything like that. And she's immediately there as he gets to school. Like he gets there early too.
Oh, yeah.
Like it seems like he opens it up pretty much.
I mean, he's there to basically work out and shower, and he's still the first one at school. Yeah. That's an early morning, kids.
The funniest thing. And like, I think what sets the tone for this entire movie, like right off the bat, it's subtle, but not so subtle, is the moment like he's there, he's working out, he's doing his thing, taking care of himself, doing his due diligence, right, of life.
Yeah.
And they just linger in that shower for long enough for him to clean his ass.
Right as his hand goes down.
Yeah, like, I mean, and they let it like sit on that for just long enough. It's like, of course you shower, you get ready, but it's like washing the ass, like really aggressive.
We all do it. Just never show it on TV.
Yeah. It's like it's kind of like a perfect setup to like this whole thing of very perfect kind of layout of this morning routine that this well-respected teacher has. And we're going to wait so you can watch him wash his ass. And like, that's very funny,
yeah.
You know? And I didn't catch it on like the very first watch. Cause I was just trying to get acquainted with right. You know? And I'm like, It's just weird, and I'm wondering if it's boring or not. And then at the same time, upon second watch, it's not terribly boring to me, I guess, as far as opening credits go.
Well, mm-hmm. I love this opening. This opening is fantastic, but it's interesting because in this opening scene, we essentially see his downfall. The one moment that potentially like kind of ruins everything is when he's cleaning out the fridge, and he throws the thing. He's doing something nice. Like, this is what, if you've ever worked in an office, refrigerators are disgusting.
They are. Nobody.
And people just leave. They just leave their shit in there.
Yep.
And so he's doing something really nice here by throwing some stuff away. And he misses the trash can. The janitor walks by.
Just watching him.
but we have to assume that he cleaned that up.
He's not going to do all this.
He immediately, like 2 seconds later, turned around and went, oh, shit.
If he's taking the time to clean out the fridge, he's probably going to clean up whatever he just dropped on the floor.
But because this fucking bullshit janitor is just creeping around going, oh, weird, he threw something on the floor, he's not going to pick it up. Like, this is the downfall of the movie for him,
right?
This moment.
The janitor left before he cleaned it up. Like, he just watched him make it fall on the floor, and he's like, fuck, Christ. Or he just goes away.
Or bro, do your fucking job and walk in and be like, I'll get that for you, Mr. McAllister, because I'm the fucking janitor.
Because I'm the janitor, and you've probably been nice to me lots of the time as well. Because you're nice to everybody. Mm-hmm. Super freaking weird. Oh, hey. Yep, you dropped that. So how's the morning going? Ready for kind of a crazy week this week,
huh? Oh, man.
Election week, right? Oh, man, I know that's big for you because you're the politics, ethics, and whatever teacher, teacher.
I know it's big for you, too, because you're going to have to pull down all the signs off the walls after this week's over and trash them.
If there's anything we can do to make sure, you know, make it a little easier on you, if there's a better tape we could use so you don't have to peel off the wall, man. Anything we could do to help you out, you know, or maybe the students can go around.
No, that's great, man. Have a good day. I'll see you tomorrow. I'll think about this a little bit.
Hey, okay? Thanks for helping me pick this up, too.
Problem. I'll come back with a mop. There's a little left.
Oh, thanks.
Cool.
We're done.
Where's my lasagna?
And then somebody fucking walks in there afterwards. Like, somebody just threw away the stuff I just brought in and set on all the six other things that I had in here from a week ago.
You know that tuna in there? That's 3 weeks it's been in there. I'm going to put it in the microwave later. It's going to smell really good.
I'm going to ruin everyone's day and week.
Janice, remember when you put ramen in there without water?
Yeah.
Let's not have that happen again. Okay.
Thank God I don't work in a freaking office like that anymore.
I worked like retail, and in the back there's a fridge because you want to bring in your lunch as much as you can. Otherwise, you end up eating Poncheros 4 days a week.
Yes, you do.
So burritos for people who don't know Poncheros. you walk in there, and there are literally points where you're like, I'm not putting – like there's a box of – like there's a box of pizza, and then there's like all this other like stuff in there too, like these containers, mm-hmm. open containers of stuff from when they did the group lunch.
Yep.
And you're like, I'm not putting my food in there. Yeah. I would rather it sit out mm-hmm. on the counter. Maybe he should have just done that.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. Chris Klein's best role.
You really think that?
Yeah, I do.
This is fucking first role.
I think I'm in on it. I think it's I think it's amazing.
Is it it's better than Just Friends? Than Dusty Dinkelman?
It's more of a you know what? I think he plays both of those so well. Like he plays like the kind of the jerk in Just Friends really, really God, that whole
that's what I'm saying. I think I would have liked remember we talked about how much I hated Chris Klein, like the American Pie Chris Klein, like oh God. But I think I would have liked him better in American Pie had I really paid more attention to this movie.
Mm.
Because this is what it kind of comes from.
I think it's the best of Dusty Dinkelman and American Pie kind of put together. Like I think that it's so layered in the way that he's so dumb that he doesn't realize his jockness. Like he doesn't,
right.
He doesn't.
The privileges that brings you as like being an attractive, like star quarterback in the high school. Like you get ladies, you know, and like whenever that he doesn't like pursue the ladies, mm-hmm. they just kind of come to him and he's like, wow, she sucked my cock. That's fucking sick.
I never understood. And then we go back to her place for a fuck and a hot tub. And you're just like, it's so innocent the way he talks about this. I was complete surprise and she just decided to blow me. And it's like he's completely ignorant to like who he is.
He's like, if Dusty Dinkelman was the character that Dusty plays. Like as the really nice guy.
Yes.
He's like, if that character was real, you know?
Well, and then it makes you wonder, cause this is literally his first role.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He was a student at the high school that they were like scouting out and he was just trying to be an extra and they're like, no, actually you're really great.
You're great.
So it calls to mind, like, is this really just who Chris Klein is?
Maybe. Oh, man.
Like, is that actually him like being himself and just playing the role?
Hey, well, guys, I'm really stoked to be here. I really can't wait to be here.
Can you imagine like him walking up to Reese Witherspoon just like that? It's like, hey, guys, I'm super excited to be here. I'm just thank you so much for letting me be a part of it. And Reese Witherspoon's just like,
you want to go over your lines or not? Because I have work to do.
You know, we have things to do, right? So but there is... And we can talk a little bit more about it later too, but there is one part where I may put this performance over Just Friends.
Okay.
On when it comes up, I'll bring it up. But I don't know. I think I one of my favorite parts of this though is kind of it's this multi narration
mm-hmm.
and how that gives you the different perspectives of the characters.
Well, do you think it's unreliable narrator stuff going on here? Because there are there are so many people telling the story from their own perspectives, right, that like, who are we supposed to necessarily?
I think that's part of the story.
Yeah.
I think you're, I mean, that never comes to mind for me because I think it's just like, this is the story.
It's the story.
It's like everybody's unreliable. And
right,
like, I'm sure everyone, like, I think the tone of the movie is that the people are wash their asses in showers, you know, and
right,
we just don't see any of that. People don't talk about that. So I think them trumping it up is just them another kind of point of contention for their characters.
Yeah.
And that's just the way they are. And but I do agree with you. Like, this is what makes the movie for me, because like, honestly, I would be like, okay, yeah, this is kind of fun, I guess. Like, he's washing his ass. That's funny. I've never really seen that in movies and stuff. But then we get these perspectives of everybody, and that is what's catching us up with everything. Like, this is our exposition of everybody. Everyone's chipping in on the exposition, and it's really smart. It's really fucking cool.
This movie just brought that kind of stuff, and this brought me back so hard to be like, why didn't I like this movie? Mm-hmm. This whole, like, when it freezes on her face.
Yeah.
First of all, what a perfect place to just freeze it.
She was
Thank
pissed
you for
about
saying
it.
Yeah. That.
Was she really?
Yeah, she's pissed.
Reese Shut Witherspoon up, Reese. Was.
Mm-hmm. Oh. Take one for the fucking team.
It's like so Christ. Perfect for the
it
movie.
It has to be that way.
Yeah.
But, like, this is just such brilliant filmmaking and writing because it freezes. She's about to tell us what the difference of ethics and morals are, which, by the way, I think is one of the hardest concepts to even grasp anyway. So most listeners are going, yeah, I do want to know the difference between ethics and morals.
Yeah.
And it stops on her. And then like 2 minutes later, it's like, oh, by the way, it unfreezes her to where she could start talking again, but she doesn't finish and it freezes on her again. And then like 8 minutes later, it comes back to her again. And she still doesn't finish the ethics morals conversation.
The bell
and
rings.
And eventually we like learn it way later from someone else.
Because you just saw all of her ethics and morals in those flashbacks.
It's like, just like,
it's not going to let her answer because that's truly her, you know?
Dude, it's like this movie's brilliant. Like, it is just, I'm immediately on the couch going, I was dreading this movie. When Starling said, let's watch it, I'm like, God, I just don't want to watch that movie. I've never wanted to watch
it again.
Even
when I put it on my top five for 1999?
No.
Fuck, man.
Like, I was like, well, Sean likes movies.
Sean likes weird fucking movies. But, we all know that.
But I'm immediately like, yeah. I'm like on my couch going, I can't wait to watch the rest of this. Because I finally understood the tone of what was going on. I just didn't understand it back then. I didn't know what they were going for.
There's a proper depth that is like kind of laid out on these characters. And I think that, I think this kind of gives us a bit of a clinic on that because to understand like depth of a character, you don't have to give a bunch of like context or you know, have somebody laying it all out for you. All we need is to be able to watch this guy wash his ass for a little bit, or learn a little bit more of the like his perspective on what happened with between Tracy and his friend who was also a teacher,
Dave.
Mm-hmm. Dave.
That cut to the
oh dude, the
thing about Tracy Flick, her pussy gets so wet you wouldn't believe it.
It's right on his face. And he's like, what?
Yeah, it's just right.
Don't tell me that shit.
Like, don't tell me that. They're in like they're playing music together.
Dude, that's my fucking future.
Sean, that creeps me the fuck out. And we're gonna talk about this next week with Rockstar. But like the fact that he just talked about having an affair with an underage girl and how in love he is to him playing fucking guitar in his basement.
Broderick is just playing bass. There's no drummer.
There's no drums.
Foxy.
Yeah.
There's no beat.
Sean's going, oh, that's my future. I'm going, I'm done playing music. I don't want this to ever happen.
And you know what? Like, they have what should be this great friendship. Their wives become best friends. They're like hanging out and just kind of, I don't know. What do you call that?
Saturday morning
or
whatever.
It's a fun thing that, oh, the guys want to get together and jam a little bit or something. I'll come on over with them and like, yeah, I'll bring Daryl too. And like, oh, it's fun, you know.
They shut the door.
Yeah, like it's fine, right? Like it's all, but then you have that whole cutaway and like and especially like him just coming up to like, it makes you wonder, how did this conversation between the two of them start? Did he just come up with this?
He needed to tell somebody. He's truly thinks he's in love. Like, he's so excited to tell him about this.
Yeah. Man.
which is so, it just, it creeps me out. It just the, you know, like her saying that he wasn't taking advantage of her. Like, it's like, no, like he was.
And when they show like, and I think it's her perspective that kind of dives deeper in to like, it wasn't him like taking advantage of
me. I was
me
in control.
I like we were no, doing that. It was a mutual thing. And it's just like, we just watched that back and like he approached you and this is very
he
strange.
Said the right things. He's like, you're just so smart and amazing and beautiful. And like, you know, I just, it's just like whatever. I don't even know if that's the right term. It's like the grooming thing.
Yeah.
It's just like, it just creeps me the fuck out.
I thought
out.
When he was handing her the can, it was like alcohol.
100%.
And yeah. I was like, that's even taking it. But it's like Mr. Pibb or some
it,
shit.
It was mug root beer.
It was a diet mug root beer.
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
And the fucking, the card that he gives her.
Oh, dude.
The, your teacher is in quotation marks. And P.S. I really, really, really need you now.
God.
He's
and
like,
and then it goes down to him crying in the chair. We're in love.
That I need guy, to ask you. The principal might be. I don't.
He's really
no,
good.
No, no, no.
Just fine. Say it.
Is the principal the best part of the movie?
He's really good.
If you've ever watched any like Parks and Rec, he's their mayor.
Oh, that's right.
Or not? Might not be the mayor. Sorry, he's the city planner.
Okay.
And in the earlier seasons and stuff, and he is amazing.
Just so dry.
And but in this he's older, obviously. In this, he's got a full head of hair, no mustache, and it's very different from what he's playing in nowadays. But man, his delivery is so good.
It gives you the thought that this happens a lot, like just the mental relationships potentially between students and teachers.
Sure.
Because he's like, listen, I've heard it from them, but I need to hear it from you.
Yeah.
Did you cross the line?
You cross
meaning
the line
like
the school?
Meaning like if you didn't cross the line, like we're fine.
AJ is born to play a character like
just
that.
Do it again. What?
You cross the line with this girl.
if we all ever get cast in a movie, that's AJ's role.
Like, I just
chewing gum.
I need
kind of lifting your pants up a little bit.
AJ's going to be one of the most underrated character actors that there ever was.
You need to be honest with me, okay, at this point. You cross the line with this girl. Or?
Yep. Yep.
Because and you know what else?
Let's make a recreation of this scene.
Okay. I'll be him.
You be the principal.
I'll be Dave.
You be Dave, and I'll be Mr. M.
Okay.
And let's recreate that entire scene.
I want that so much. Yes.
But it's great too because I like I don't like, but like it's the scene where they have like the meeting or whatever. Like they stay at that pizza place or something.
Yeah.
It's like it just ended up being us two. I'm like, I would never ever fucking let that happen.
No.
Like if I found myself in a position like that where I'm like that person's authority figure be like, okay, so we got to wrap this up. We got to go. I have shit to do. You know,
can I just say also FYI, I didn't wear my sweatshirt today, but, where are the parents?
Yeah.
And
this
just
is
say,
a different time.
Like,
this is a completely different time where they're like, oh yeah, just be home later.
By the way, we totally see like where her mom is in life, essentially, like, especially afterwards. Mm-hmm. And she literally comes in. It's like, here, have one of my pills,
which we don't know what that is.
And you're just like, this will help you relax. Just like, okay,
we get
what
it.
Is going on, but it's these moments, those moments of like the teachers interacting with each other, calling each other by their first names. That's the kind of stuff that happens in high schools behind closed doors. Mm-hmm. The drama, the,
I just
all that
thought
stuff.
It didn't happen, so I was like, I was like, this is a movie stupid. It's like, no, that shit happens.
Yeah, it's weird. That's a good point because you like when you're in high school, you really never realize that because
you weren't the one that
probably,
the teacher wanted. I know.
Well, no,
me neither.
I was never
the one. You know, hear about these fucking high school kids that the hot teacher just does them in the back.
Did you guys
it
have
wasn't
that?
Me.
Did you guys have rumors like that?
No.
No.
We never had hot teachers, guys or girls.
There were some of our teachers like were attractive. There was an instance at one of our schools, and it sucked because it was like a terrible thing to like happen.
I mean, it does happen.
It does.
It's happened a lot of times. Just in our area,
they still go on to teach on OnlyFans.
There you go. Oh. See, weird.
Whoa.
Hopefully you figured it out by now that every single one of our sponsors are companies that we use, love, and trust. LawnBright is no different. In fact, LawnBright has given me so much joy lately that I want to shout it to the rooftops, and I'll explain why. As you know, my lawn looks terrible. I've talked about it. I'm a busy guy, and now with a kid in the mix, I can't keep up with it. Every spring, I do exactly what you all do. I wander around Home Depot for hours. Then I watch YouTube videos, all trying to find out the secret to DIYing my lawn. I eventually give up because I run out of time, and then I end up paying hundreds to thousands of dollars to a local company to come out to care for my lawn. But really, what are they actually doing? It never seems to work. They do stupid shit like running over my downspouts with their machines and then say they didn't. Here's where LawnBright comes in. LawnBright is a solution that takes the guesswork out of DIYing your lawn. LawnBright's custom lawn plan delivers everything you need for a healthy lawn all year long. All their plans start with a soil test so they can build a plan that delivers that exact nutrients that you need. We're talking soil conditioners, fertilizers, seed, weed control, everything you're going to need for the entire year. And we love that their products are natural. There's no harsh chemicals. So that means if your kids and pets are on the grass, you don't have to worry about it. These products are super easy to use. You hook them up to a hose. They take about 15 minutes to spray on. The company even sends text reminders based on your weather so you can apply at the right time. Because I'm using LawnBright this year, I don't have to spend any time on research. I get to save so much money, and here's where the pure joy comes in. I've answered my door no less than 6 times already this spring to a loser from a lawn care company trying to sell me on their service, and I get to say, no thanks, I'm doing it myself with LawnBright. Slam the door, and you can do the same thing. Please join us. Go to GetLawnBright.com and use code CONFUSED for 20% off your order. That's GetLawnBright.com. Use code CONFUSED for 20%. Your time is running out. Spring is here, and you need to get control of that lawn. So do it with LawnBright. Let's go.
These are the moments, though, and this is like it was about this point, and when that principal comes on screen, I'm sorry, I can't remember his name right now.
Doesn't matter.
I know it doesn't, but I AJ, like him.
Principal AJ.
I like him so much, I wanted to say his name.
All right, I got you.
But when he comes on screen, we really start seeing this interaction between like Dave, who's crying, and the principal, and like and Jim is sitting there too, who must have been like, we need to go and we need to set this right, all this stuff. This is the moment that I felt like, because of the characters that were now coming into this, this is like if John Hughes directed, like had written and directed a movie, but then the Coen brothers came in and produced and edited the movie.
Yeah.
And that is what is happening here. And there's very, very little that you can dislike about this at this point, you know, the way that these stories are coming around.
And with like the student's perspective and stuff like that, it makes me think of Heather's too.
Yep.
So that, yes, that guy Waters, I forget his first name, but if like he had a little touch up of that script or right, something, you know, like it would be, yeah, this is all what it is.
Yeah. And I think Heather's is a great category for this to kind of fall into these types of movies.
It's not really the high school.
High school movie, sort of like the opposite of it.
Yeah, and the whole progression of like of watching Tracy Flick again, she just is going to go on with life as though this is not a thing that she should even care about, you know, and she's laying everything out for the election and how much Matthew Broderick, like Jim, just doesn't freaking care.
Nope.
I just do not care. Like, yep, looks like you got them all. Weren't you supposed to hold on to them? Oh, it's not really a big deal. It looks like you got them all. Well, I think the rules said you're supposed to. And like that's this reoccurring theme too that I really like is this mention of the rules that keeps on coming up and how Matthew Broderick's character just kind of keeps letting these rules go.
And they're probably rules the
ethics teacher
that he set.
Right.
Because of that's how maybe politics works or like voting works in real life when we all go and vote, you know. But he's going back on him because he's got problems at home. He's fallible. Like he doesn't give that much of a shit.
Like who cares? It's student council. Nothing. It's whatever. This doesn't matter.
Yeah, but it's what you taught us.
We're not electing the fucking Pope. Okay.
Yeah, dude, that's so good.
Well, let's go on to scene two. So Tracy's running unopposed, so Mr. McAllister decides to persuade popular kid named Paul Metzler to enter the race. This infuriates Tracy. Meanwhile, Paul's younger sister Tammy is rejected by her romantic interest Lisa. Lisa then engages in a passionate relationship with Paul. To retaliate against Paul and Lisa, Tammy decides to run for school president as well. Jim McAllister's doing some work around the house for Linda and somewhat embarrasses himself. This affects him, his sexual performance at home. I was thinking about this, though. Like, is Mr. McAllister actually worried that he's going to have an affair with Tracy?
Tracy?
Like, they don't really touch on it, but is he worried she's going to kind of seduce him? Because he's watching, like, this high school porno thing.
Called Touchdown.
He's watching that, and this is after the direct conversation of we're going to be spending a lot of time together.
Yeah.
And you initially take that as like, he just is annoyed by her, but he's also like, yeah, but maybe the thing about her pussy is true.
I think it's
like, which is gross.
I think there's this weird combination of like, this is kind of what's keeping him up because it happened so close to somebody that he knows. And could she do this to me? You know, it's like this fear of but also this like he doesn't want that to happen.
Or maybe he does.
You think?
I think it's an intrusive thought.
Yeah.
Like, okay.
He's thinking about it.
I mean, it's like he's a man and she's an attractive woman. So like, fuck, I'm just human, you know? And like, so like when those thoughts come, be like, nope, bury it, put that away. Yeah. Not going to try and think about that ever.
That's not getting any more attention.
Yep, not going to.
Instead, I'll exactly. go watch a porno about and, high school kids banging.
Also a weird thing, though.
Okay, also okay. kind but of healthy. And like, you know, get, you know.
I guess if that's what.
Don't you know. Actually do it, but you can do whatever you want at home, you know.
But you know what's super funny? Like, this is, it's so blatant. It has to be, right? It's when he goes down there, he goes through and he's been through this almost routine how many times before. He can't sleep. He goes down. He grabs himself a Pepsi, gets the blankets out of the thing, and he just does this in the basement where they store everything, and all the blankets out of the blanket chest that never gets opened up, that every single house has. Yep. That I think, as Sean would say, it comes with this thing. Yeah.
The trunk full of blankets.
The trunk full of blankets that never get used.
With the trap door at the bottom, yeah.
Well, and then he sees all those tapes, right? But it's the moment when he's watching it that it's so obvious, like, especially the guy is just not a high school. It's like, well, obviously. He's obviously older. And then like it even goes as far as to show like the bald spot on his head.
Like, he's an actual professional football player.
It's just funny. You know, like that's the kind of shit that's I think is funny. Obviously that guy is not a high school kid.
Yeah.
In this movie. Yes. No one else is in these scenario. It's all kind of tying itself together. I don't know.
Prop your daddy.
Oh.
Ooh. Here's a prop.
I need a touchdown for my VHS collection.
You want it for your collection? Yeah. Because somebody's probably not going to pull it out and be like, what the fuck? Nobody's going to watch Touchdown.
Yo, you remember the porno from my election?
You don't want the.
What are you talking about?
Let's put it on. We want it here.
Yeah.
We want it in our collection. We would just put it in between other VHSs.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, just whatever.
Touchdown.
Like, remember the Titans and another sports
and then Touchdown
thing.
And then, you know, Varsity Blues.
Yes.
And, you know. Yeah. There you go.
I want 100%. I mean, all of Paul's running for president posters are
just, are you going to do it? Okay.
I want, there's a lot of good ones, but I want Paul Metzler, you Betzler.
That's what I wanted to do.
That's the best poster. That's fucking genius.
Paul Metzler, you Betzler. You Betzler.
Like when he's in the car and he's considering.
Dude, I love
it. And he's like, Paul, power.
Progress.
Peanut.
Oh my God. I'm not going to forget this if I say it, then you can do your prop. The introduction of Chris Klein here, where he's like, he falls off the fucking cliff and it's like an infomercial. Yeah. It looks like a Sturdy Wings. It looks like a Sturdy Wings infomercial where he's like staring at the lake. I was so mad at God when I broke my leg, and he's just staring out. But then I found Sturdy Wings.
Cross dissolves of him still looking at the lake.
All right, sorry. Go ahead.
Now that was definitely a prop that I wanted, but I will take this a step back, and I want Paul's speech.
Just his piece of it. It's pretty good.
And no honestly, punctuation at all.
Honestly, like he reads it like I read like an IMDb like review of sometimes. And I might as well make mention of it now. But that speech, when he does that speech and he's just like, clearly like Mr. McAllister must have written this for him.
100%. Right?
And he's just like, as your president, I won't let you down. I won't let you down just like I did in the game when we almost went to state that 1 year through the touchdown pass. I won't let you down. If you vote for Paul Metzler, then I promise then we'll be able to move on. Thanks for your problems.
It's so underrated.
It's this performance of him just like he's got to like slouch down.
Yes.
And then he's like standing up straighter and getting quieter. And of course, the most inaudible thing is vote for Paul.
That's whenever we're playing a wedding and we have to give a microphone to someone giving a speech, they always go, they're like, check one, two. Is this on? Is it on? Everybody can hear me? Okay.
So anyway, yeah. When I was hanging out over, like,
they're holding it down here.
Yes, they check it up here, and then they hold it down by their crotch.
There's a thing as performers called mic control.
Mic control. Yeah,
and, weird. As you get louder, you back off. You back off when you get louder. Back off. When you're kind of a little more serious, you kind of get in there.
No, yeah. Definitely want the letter, though, or the speech. Yeah,
we got to talk about the dialogue. That like just the guy that wrote this, it was that Alexander
Payne and a partner of his.
Dude, this script is just unbelievable. And you take the just such a good script and then you give it to talented people.
Jim Taylor, sorry.
To perform it. Mm. Like this, when Reese Witherspoon's character is doing this mega speech, she just got mad that Paul was entered into the race. And she's just speaking about basically like rich, popular kids getting whatever they want. And she's slowly increasing in anger as she's saying this. And then she's on the bus. And it's zooming in on her face while she's looking at Paul, like signing yearbooks and shit. And she's like, yeah, it zooms in on her and she's getting, no, doesn't bother me at all. She yells no. And then just like, doesn't bother me at all. And it cuts because it had zoomed all the way in her face. Like, it's just one of those beautiful moments of where writing, filmmaking and acting like can all just like come together in just beautiful perfection.
100%.
I would agree with you. I think, These moments of like really getting to know Paul and everything and like and what's going on with Tammy and is it Lisa?
Tammy and Lisa.
You know, that's an underrated moment of this whole movie too. Of like they're like Lisa makes it a point to say like we're just like experimenting. Like I'm not like I don't feel this way. This is it's a change. Like maybe I did. I was confused. Now I don't feel this way. And Tammy is still very upset with this and still will just not, she just can't let it go. And I think that's an overlooked thing because we never hear, I don't believe we ever hear Lisa's turn to narrate, right?
Mm-hmm.
We only get Tammy's side of it.
Right.
And her side very clearly states like, I just, like at one point she literally says, I just want Lisa to realize how much of a bitch she's being and like, and then realize how much she loves me and like wants, and that's it. And it's like, this is not what the relationship is.
Right.
And then to get back or goes and has this relationship. I thought it was really weird when after she got done, Lisa came over and was blowing me and like, Jesus, like, does it make you think though, that Lisa was with hanging out with Tammy to get to Paul? Or was this just strictly a get back at?
I think she's still experimenting. Like, to be honest, you know, like she was with Tammy and doing all that stuff. And then she just was kind of getting over it. And she might just be both. And now she's on to, I mean, the shittiness of it is that it's her brother.
Right.
Yes. Stepbrother, I guess.
Yeah.
Or adopted, whatever.
Whatever.
Even though you're adopted.
when so he good. Busted, Tammy, I gotta tell you something.
I do like that, and I like that it, you know, the immaturity of it, because I'm sure Tammy feels like she's the only one that's like that at the school, you know, and she finally found the other person that might be like that, and then it just turns out not, and then fucking stabs her in the back and goes with her brother, you
right.
know?
Yeah, that's tough.
Like, that does really suck, but yeah, I'm not sure. I think she was just going to the closest thing, you know, the jock.
And the closest thing that could maybe completely shut down, hopefully shut down Tammy's pursuance.
Yeah, really. Yeah. Like going to the the man
yeah.
in the class. Yeah.
Right.
This is the subtle awesome parts of this when they're having the conversation. He's asking Paul to run for student council, and he does the apples and oranges thing.
Yeah.
But before that, he even said, what's your favorite fruit? Pears. No, wait, apples.
And
apples. And then he's talking about apples and oranges. Wait, actually bananas.
Actually, but I do really like bananas. He
actually listened to nothing he said because he was ready
about fruit.
He was ready to talk. But then like 10 minutes later, he walks into the kitchen and there are apples, oranges, yep. pears, and bananas.
Yeah.
And he picks the banana.
Right.
It's really smart. Like even earlier too, when they're having the argument about Tracy and Dave, I think he says, I'm not talking about ethics. I'm talking about morals is what McAllister.
Yeah.
Jim says, and he's like, what's the difference? And he's like, they're still in that flashback, you know, it's so good.
They're still caught in this almost to that degree. And I think it's funny. You mentioned like the apples, oranges, and the bananas. And there's like references that Mr. McAllister has apples in shots with him all the time.
Yeah,
sure.
And I was trying really hard in the last watch that I was doing to see if there were any references to what Tracy might be, but I didn't catch any, if there was like any oranges there or anything in her shots. And I couldn't tell, but I didn't know if you guys had caught on to that at all, because he'll always go in. Like when he goes in, he picks up an apple to eat. There's an apple behind him when he's like, there's like different references that, of how people they're all different, you know.
The subtle placement of things, like she's talking about Coca-Cola, but he's always got Pepsi's. Yeah. Like there's just subtle things that you don't have to notice. It doesn't enhance the story at all. But if you do, it's cool. It's just extra little.
It's like it's a nice nod. It's very much in dressing people in specific colors to basically create a subconscious of they're on opposite teams.
Oh yeah.
You know what I mean?
It's telling the story visually too. Like, well that could be the apples and oranges thing. I think what you're getting at is Pepsi and Cola. Like she's a Cola, Pepsi and
apples and oranges.
She's by far the most popular soda like in the world.
Yeah.
But he doesn't want to get on board. He wants to continue to drink his Pepsi. Yeah.
Nobody likes Pepsi.
No one likes Pepsi.
No.
I kind of like Pepsi.
What?
Don't talk.
Dude,
don't
Pepsi talk. Blue? Pepsi Blue, let's go.
Crystal clear Pepsi? That tasted weird.
Pepsi Crystal. Can I get a Pepsi free?
Can we talk about Broderick? Can we talk about Broderick in this?
Yeah, please.
So like coming from Ferris Bueller's Day Off, obviously, which is basically a high school movie, I guess. Like he's the high schooler in it. But then to this role, I think is just brilliant, perfect casting. Like to have the icon of all icons of one of the, you know, seminal John Hughes high school movies and the star of that come and do this just stripped away non-character, just very human, very flawed, washing his ass type character, I think is perfect casting.
He's just so good at playing that role. I never appreciated it. Like I will eventually get to Cable Guy. I hated Cable Guy.
I did too. Yeah.
I fucking hated it. I just didn't like that this isn't my Matthew Broderick and this isn't my Jim Carrey. What the fuck's going on here?
Yeah.
And so, but then now you can really appreciate it when you go back and to these type of movies to be like, damn, Matthew Broderick, like you nailed it.
Yeah.
The
subtle reactions he has to like the bullshit Tracy does, you know, just like, okay, you know, that kind of shit.
His eyes tell a lot.
It really does.
Yeah. Even with like the bee sting, and he's only got the one eye and he's still so expressive with that.
It's so funny to watch him. Like it's like watching a Two-Faced character at that point.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because you, especially if you just focus on one eye, like if you focus on the one that wasn't stung, he's a different character than the guy who did get stung. It's so crazy. I don't know what kind of a makeup thing that was, whatever.
That's interesting. I like that a lot.
But it's very well done. But I think that for Matthew Broderick, I literally watched War Games in between watching this a couple times. I did not watch Ferris Bueller. People are saying that we got to do Ferris Bueller go to Chicago.
There's so many.
In fact,
here's your reminder again. People of Chicago, we know you listen. Our analytics say that you're one of our most listened to towns. If that is the case, go directly to the link in this episode and click on it. Put your name on there. You'll be first dibs for a possible live show in Chicago. But that brings up the case of we have to do a movie about Chicago, and there are so many good ones that we still have not done. A
lot of good
ones. So many good
ones.
So then we may have to leave it up to a vote at that point for our Chicago fans.
Maybe.
We might have to. I mean, but Ferris Bueller I've put off watching that movie again and again because I know we're going to get to it eventually. And but thinking about him, I'm just like, are we sure this isn't Ferris Bueller? What if this was? There's got to be a theory out there about that kind of stuff.
You never know.
You
right?
never know. No. I feel like you do.
I don't have one.
Oh.
But I will sure come up with one and put it on TikTok.
Fantastic.
Even if it actually, it'll be all the better if it really doesn't make sense.
Ferris Bueller had his run-ins with Rooney all the time. And eventually, by the time he did eventually graduate,
became Rooney.
He became and gained some respect for him and what he put him through originally and said, you know what? I want to teach people. Just like he teaches Cameron.
How can I reach these kids?
How can I reach these kids?
Talking about the script a little bit more too, I love the way that they introduce these characters, and they seem inconsequential to the story until they aren't, because like they're introducing them for a reason. Like Tammy, you know, is everyone pretty much gets introduced because they're going to become a cog in the story.
Yep.
It's not just because we're trailing off for a bit and having fun over here for a bit. It's like, this matters.
Get to know them real quick. We'll bring them in later.
Yeah.
And like Linda, like, too, I think, here in this scene.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's they're bringing all these characters in where they could just be like, we need to be funny, so we need to derail a little bit and go over here and have fun a little bit, but then that won't ever be a thing. But that is a thing in this movie, and I fucking love that. It's really smart.
It calls the question, the thing I talked about, the reliable narrator, like, do we really believe that Mr. McAllister is like a good guy? We're supposed to believe it, but this is his story, being like, I'm a good guy, and this all this bad stuff happened to me. But even in the subtle things, like when he's with Linda and they drive past the hotel and he's like, want to get a room? Like, that's not a good joke. And
especially after there was just an affair that, like, sorry for stating the obvious.
Yeah. It's not a funny joke. And even if you're not a funny person, I can't imagine like driving Katie somewhere and being like, hey, I want to get a room.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, I just, like, that would never even be a thing that I would think to say.
Yeah.
And so that's just where you start to get these little hints of like,
I think he's just unfortunately extremely normal.
I think
that's it.
I think, like, there is a, yeah, I think you're right. I think that there is a point where he has just been in this life very much like Tracy says, doing the same thing over and over again, year after year, to new people, and watching students go on with their lives and go do great things, and he's still here doing this one thing. And like, he's caught in this circular mundanity of his life.
Yep.
And now that something has changed in it, like Lisa what's her name?
Linda.
Linda is now this, all this stuff happened with his best friend and his wife. And this is like a big, it's like a spoke falling off the wheel, and now it's making it bump. And it's like, it's causing
things
this
are different
thing.
Now. In the
his
routine's
life.
Not the same.
I'm looking at Linda a different way now
of this.
Because
now
thing.
He has to spend time with her to help around the house.
Right.
Fucking up his. And then maybe because he's spending so much time there, he's not staying with his morning routines of working out.
Right.
Because we don't really see. We're implied that he does that every morning, but then he never does it again.
Yeah.
He starts falling off his like healthy habits.
Sure.
Which start bringing in negative habits. Like, that's a great point. Like, the one thing changed in his normal mundanity, and now it's like, oh, fuck.
He desperately needs a thing.
Yeah,
like,
he does. He needs a hobby. He needs something to, like, get him out of this mundanity that's just, it will cripple you, apparently.
This fear that he has, that he loves his wife, that's, as he's kind of stating, and like, you know, we're two parts of this, like, we're very together. And it's almost this kind of convincing himself kind of idea.
Oh, yeah.
Because then once Linda is freed up and he starts looking at her in a different way, and then it's like, I don't know what to do. Like, now it's all being thrown off. Now I have to go help her out. And now it's like, that's what I'm supposed to be doing as the good neighbor or good friend. And it's like, it's a weird thing that he's almost convincing himself of.
Yeah, it's almost psychotic in the way of, like, you give yourself these little allowances to do bad things, you know, and like every time you do, one gets worse and one gets worse, you know. So he throws out that subtle joke to be like, huh? Okay, that didn't work.
Okay, wow, okay.
Yeah.
You know what Mr. McAllister needed here? He needed to just go away for the weekend, get a case of Cedar Ridge whiskey, go find a cabin somewhere, and just chill out and forget about all this. This all could have been avoided if he would have just relaxed a little bit. That's what I'm saying. And you know, that's what we love to do whenever we're looking for a moment of relaxation and we want to sip on a little bit of those adult beverages. We choose Cedar Ridge whiskey. It is the greatest whiskey in the world. It is distilled in our backyard. They've been the longest standing sponsor of this podcast, and we love them more than we love movies, and that says a lot. And we think that you guys will love them too. Countless people in our audience have ordered a bottle from CedarRidgeDistillery.com or have found some at local distillers and have written us and said, you weren't lying, this is the best. Some have gotten the bourbon, the flagship bourbon, 86 proof, perfect for cocktails. Some have ordered the American Quintessential Single Malt, which, by the way, scotch is garbage. This single malt is the best thing you will ever taste, and that's because it's made by Cedar Ridge Whiskey. Some of our big metal fans, they get the Slipknot inspired. It's called bottle number 9. They mix rye and bourbon together. We're telling you, Cedar Ridge Whiskey is the greatest that has ever been made and ever will be made, and you need to try it because they sponsor this podcast and you need to sponsor them. So please go to CedarRidgeDistillery.com. Try to order some straight to your door, or try to just bug your local distributor. Say, hey, get some. It's the best. I want to buy it from you. Most of the time, they'll do it for you. And please drink responsibly. Let's get back to the movie.
Well, let's move on to scene 3. So during a school assembly to hear the candidate's speeches, Tammy rallies the students to a standing ovation, but her subversive diatribe results in her getting a suspension from school. Tracy has an uncharacteristic fit of rage and destroys all of Paul's campaign posters. She then drives to a local power plant to dispose of them shredded posters in a nearby dumpster, but Tammy witnesses it. The next day, when Mr. McAllister confronts Tammy about the missing posters and Tracy adamantly claims innocence, Tammy arrives and takes the blame to be permanently expelled out of school and be sent to an all-girls Catholic school. Yeah, you already talked about Paul's speech being unreal. Like, I love Tammy's speech too, because it perfectly supplants like how school council elections were. There was always the really goody two-shoes one that was strictly doing it to put on their resume for later on in life.
Right.
Then there was always just the really popular person that's like, oh, that'd be fun, I guess, whatever. And then there was always the anarchist kid that was like, lunch period's going to be 2 hours long. We're going to have free soda in the lounge every day. And like, and that's who Tammy is. And I fucking love her. She gets suspended for 3 days. I got suspended for 3 days my senior year. And it's the perfect explanation. She's like, I got suspended for 3 days.
It's a little vacation.
It's a mini vacation. You literally have no responsibilities and you don't have to go to school for 3 days.
Yeah.
Like, it was awesome. And she perfectly explains that. And her speech is so great because the students are like, fuck yeah, we don't care about this. This is so stupid. Dude,
it doesn't affect anybody. It doesn't change anything for anyone. It doesn't make anybody smarter. It doesn't make them more like, it doesn't make them better at anything.
Nope.
It only affects the person who really wins.
And it won't change anything because their principal's going to be like, yeah, that's not happening.
Right.
Well, and the parallels to real politics and real elections is, I mean, it's like, we don't really need to get too deep into it because it's pretty on the surface in this movie, I think, anyway. But even just like the different candidates, just like one is like, yeah, I'm burning this whole thing down. We're restarting, you know? And like the one that tells it for real, and the one that's establishment and is like, oh, status quo kind of stuff. It's I love how it breaks it down into this because it's so stupid.
Paul's basically like the candidate with the donors. Because he's got Matthew, he's got McAllister behind him, being like, here, we'll give you everything you need. Oh, here's 100%. Your speeches. Yeah. It's fucking cool.
And then Tammy is basically after her speech, and because she's kind of causing this, you know, animosity amongst the election
third
itself,
party candidate.
This third party candidate kind of a thing. That's basically, then we cut to principal who says, I want her out of it. I don't want her to be a part of this.
Kick her out of school.
Kick her out of school.
We can't do that.
We can't not let her be a part just because we didn't like her speech. He's like, I guess.
The 3 day suspension.
3 day suspension. And they basically work to get her out of the election eventually.
Because they don't want her changing anything about the way we've always done it with two parties.
Two parties.
Get her out of here.
Yep. Man, see?
Think about it, man.
Think about that shit.
Think about how we're all just sheeple.
Wake up, sheeple!
You gotta wake up!
Anytime anyone ever says wake up, I immediately am like, fuck you.
Rock the boat. Rock the boat.
Yeah.
Fuck.
I am awake. I'm really awake. I want to go to bed.
Rather actually. I be asleep.
I want to. Yeah, remember the whole red pill, blue pill thing? I'm staying in the Matrix.
Yep.
Fuck you.
Just please and thank you.
Leave me alone.
It's this moment of, I'm trying to think of like, what is it that sent Tracy over the edge in this moment of like tearing down the posters? Like, obviously, like, it's just the tape on the back. She's talking about that. You can't do the tape on the outside. You have to do it on the behind. It's like, we're just going to have to redo all these posters. And then they make this new one after the speeches, and it won't stay up on the wall. Uh-huh. And she just flies off the handle pretty much on this. Is it just because she thought it was just going to be a given and, like, she was a shoo-in? And she's tired of seeing this other stuff, like Paul's posters?
Yeah.
Is that it?
Well, you have to assume, right? I think it's implied, right? Correct me if I'm wrong, but that she is the incumbent, right? Like, she was president before this.
Ooh, I don't think so.
I don't know if she was. I don't think she was. President.
I think every year there's a new president.
Okay,
I think she
was part of the student government.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So she was working her way up.
She is
failing her way up to the top.
Right, and that's what's going on, and her not being able to stick this poster. I'm trying to figure out like the fuse or the break of this, you know. It's like Paul's are staying up, but hers aren't. Like, I just don't get it. You know what I mean?
It's just
Paul's are completely stupid.
Yeah, they're awesome.
They're so simple.
Metzler is just amazing.
She spent so much time on everything. Like, she spent her whole life on this, and it's so frustrating to see someone who just like, I put up a poster.
Just walking into it.
Yeah, just like, slap it up there, and it's just, I think what you're getting at is correct, where it's just like he put the minimal amount of effort. He didn't even want to do it in the first place. And this is her whole life, you know? And so to see just like a little corner of one of her posters just be like, keep falling down, that's fucking it, man. I'm burning this place down.
And she's realizing that she's not going to win. I mean, because first of all, it's like, oh, shit, now I got to battle Paul, this popular kid. Now Tammy walks in and just... She envisioned the standing ovation for her speech.
Right.
When she wrote it.
Yeah.
And she didn't get it. And then this fucking Tammy girl is just like, yeah, whatever. Ah!
Can we talk about Reese Witherspoon for a little bit, too?
Yeah.
I think that this is... Well, she's nominated for a Golden Globe for this.
Yeah.
But I think this is as best as she can get, man. Like, this is... I mean, not as best as she can get, but, like, one of the best she's ever been. 100%. And it really kind of shocks me to watch this again and be like, she was so good so fucking early.
I know.
It's so underrated to play someone that you hate.
Yeah.
And like, cause that sucks. Cause you want to be the cool guy. You want to be like James Bond if you're going to be an actor or something like that. But she, to take her talents and make you hate her is just incredible. It's hard to create that, to create like a hateable person.
Because you do, it's true. Like that, the title of that review is 100% true. We all knew someone who was kind of like this.
I'd like to get into that too, if any of us did.
Yeah, like I think you totally do, and you totally know the person who is. It's like they live and die by the rules except for themselves. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And they're always presented in this way of like, oh yeah, I'm gonna go and do this, and then I did this and I put everything out perfect, and this is what I'm doing, and everything's awesome, and like, but I don't want anyone else to like step into what I'm doing.
Yeah.
The moment that Paul comes into this race, the moment that Tammy comes in, it's like, it's this building anger of like, that's not supposed to happen. I'm supposed to just be running unopposed. This is not okay. Mm-hmm. Like, what the heck? And that very, very, perfect kind of mentality of, and the way she does it, even with her voice, you can tell. I don't know. Did you guys know somebody like this in high school?
Oh, 100%. Yeah. I mean, it was a guy in my class, but he was just like always all the time. And I was sitting back there be like, can we go home yet?
Yeah.
And he was like, I know this. And like, if it was something like it would, but I would notice like the teachers, cause no one else would be raising their hand and be like, anybody else like Broderick does in this, you know, it's just, but, you know, I also see, and maybe it could be like this in these kinds of people's lives, too. Like, she's almost a Heather because her parents are, like, not, like, especially her mom, just like, here's a pill to calm you down, you know? Yeah. Like, I don't want to actually parent you, just, I don't know, we did the best we could, you know, like she's even making like little adjustments after she loses a little later. And like,
maybe you should have used some of the words that I wrote.
Yes, exactly. It's
maybe you should have done more posters.
And that's why it's so brilliant. It makes you want to hate her. It makes you want to hate her, and then you get a glimpse into maybe why she is.
Right.
And I'm sure that dude you knew in high school was probably that way for a reason. But you don't think about that as high school kid.
No.
You just fuck that guy. Like, he sucks.
I mean, that's... And it's a lot to put on somebody, or to put on like high school kids to... Well, you need to think more about everyone else and everyone else's situations that they have to go through. It's like, no, I'm in high school.
Yeah.
Like, okay. And there is that point of, I think that McAllister, maybe he understands this to a degree, but there is like actual studies of like how detrimental it can be, like how much a high performer and like, how much like a number one, if they're always so good at it, how detrimental that can be to everyone, their peers around them.
Yeah.
Cause it's like this thing that they can never reach. And so
so why even try?
It's deterrent to them wanting to try harder because, well, he's just going to call on Tammy or Tracy anyways.
She knows the answer.
She's going to know about it anyway. Like, I don't know why I'm like, what do I need to raise my hand for? Like, I'll read the book and I'll just try do my test and I'll be done with it. It's like somebody else is already going to be doing this. So
it's like a good leader would ask.
Yeah.
Yeah. And get their opinion.
Right. And so McAllister, that's why these teachers are like, is there anybody else? Please, for the love of God, like somebody else try. Like, please.
Well, and then too, that's a healthy thing too, where he asked Paul to be in the election because, like, why run
unopposed.
Unopposed, thank you. That's not politics.
No.
Like, politics, I think, can be fun. And to be honest, it's like a race, you know? It's cool to see the process happen, and I think it's beautiful in the way that when it works, it works. And he's just kind of introducing that. He's like, this is the way it is in real life.
The vice president is running unopposed, though, with the handicapped
right,
kid.
Right, right.
Yeah.
He's like, yeah.
Just of like, course.
No. He can have it.
Even though I can't stand up for you,
he gives
I'll
the best
stand
speech.
Up for you.
He gives the best speech.
It's like, dude.
They're like, we're not running against him.
No one's going to run against him.
He can totally be vice president.
They should have just put him in the race for president.
They should have.
You know?
Oh, well, let's move on to scene four. So the day before the election, Jim is fixing things around the house for Linda, and they have sex. They agree to meet at a motel later in the day. After school, Jim can't find Linda at the hotel or at her house. He returns home to find out that Linda's been confiding in his wife. He sleeps in the car outside Linda's house and is stung by a bee.
Can I also just say really fast that I don't know why that kid didn't have a poster or something that said rolling on a post? Instead of running. Right, guys?
Got it, man. Pretty good, dude. I'm gonna leave that in. Let's get into this.
Okay.
Let's get into this juxtaposition of that stupid fucking car that Mr. McAllister drives. Like the worst car I've ever seen to that scene where after he does him and Linda get together, then he's driving through
the house. Ciao. It's like a rear projection in the back.
It's like an off-brand Geo Metro.
Yeah, like it's just, I've never seen a car like that.
Never seen
life.
That. And like, and also there's something about the 90s that something that makes me irrationally upset is the auto seatbelt.
Yes. Oh my God.
The auto seatbelt is maybe the worst thing maybe the worst invention that could have come out of the 90s.
Yes.
But to watch that happen in any moment that, like, think about if this was like a romantic movie and it's like, hey, I'll see you later. I'm so glad you came over. Yeah. And then they kiss. And then, like, the thing automatically starts going back. It's like, oh, God. Oh, shit. And they just get tangled in it together. Maybe it'd be fun. This is the worst thing ever to watch that. Like, the car's not great, but to watch that go back on his shoulder is just like another cherry on top of like, wow, I hate this so much.
Yes.
I hate it.
And dude, like, I know he's infatuated with her and just like wants to get out of this mundanity of his life, but I would never, ever, no matter how much I knew you, clean out your shower drain.
No.
That what he pulls out of there, the mini Chewbacca baby that's I'm done. That's... Not many things get me, but that fucking got me.
Let me get this correct. So your husband had an affair on you. He left the house, and now you're unable to clean your hair out of the drain.
Do anything.
Right. You're unable to do anything at all.
Right.
Okay. All right. Just checking.
Just want to make sure that this is where we're at, right? Like, you can't do anything. You really can't do much around the house for yourself of what you're saying. She has the baby. But let's just be clear. There's no way that the sexual attraction is still there after I just pulled that out.
Nope.
And it's like, yeah, I'm going to need, it's like, even if she did that thing where it's like, thank you, Jim, I'd be like, yeah, it's no problem, because I need at least an hour to be able to, like,
cleanse my brain. I don't know where that hair came from.
Now,
I'm going to go to the high school shower and clean my butthole and clean everything.
I'm going to go wash my ass.
Which, as dirty as the high school shower is, it's still cleaner than your shower. Yeah.
So much better than what I just, like, ripped out of there.
I'm gonna throw this out there.
Hit it. If we were on a train to go punch a face, I'm on board.
That's what I'm talking about.
That'd be a good prop.
There's a prop.
I'm just gonna be the one that goes out on the limb here, that the punchable face of this movie for me is Linda.
Mm.
Maybe even Jim's wife, but we won't go there. This really sucks, because it takes two to tango.
Sure does.
And forgive me for saying this, but Linda initiates this sexual contact. Now, Jim should not have moved forward.
Ready for it.
He should not have reciprocated.
But he has proven that he was ready for it. She knew that all she had to do was just touch him and he'd go hard.
Yep.
I mean, because he's ready. And the fact that this happens and then she still also feels no remorse and is like, let's meet up at the hotel.
Yeah.
And then goes over to her best friend, his wife's house, and's like, yeah, this happened, and you're still gonna love me, and we're still gonna be friends, but you're gonna get divorced with Jim.
It's better because I came and told you about this thing that happened, and I told you the way it happened in my narrative of that, and that's what's being pushed now. And how long have they been in that house together?
Yeah.
And she stayed the night there, too.
Yeah.
She didn't go home that night. They basically were like, we'll just have girl talk. Then.
We'll just have girl talk.
Because now we've both been through it.
And girl talk will just turn into, now girl talk will just turn into experimenting again.
Yes.
Men suck.
Yeah. And then we'll just raise Daryl together.
I'll say that. I'll take one for the team, that Linda, we are equal opportunity punchers. Linda needs to be punched in the
face. I'm kind of with you, man. Like, obviously, yes, he's shitty for doing this, but to be like, yeah, it was a moment of weakness, and
you took advantage of me.
Yeah.
Mm. It's like, you came on to me. You came on to Jim. Like, that's the facts.
You wanted a piece of Jim and you couldn't handle yourself.
Yeah. I was lonely. You took advantage of me. It's like, okay.
Okay.
Okay. You came on. But I don't know. Linda, there was one kid that I wanted, no, yeah, the kid who kind of gives the thumbs up to Tracy.
Oh yeah,
not even Larry. I think Larry, you know what, this also, we'll get there.
Isn't that the kid who you're talking about, thumbs up, or like the guy who's like, those are the rules, Mr. Counselor. Those are the rules.
That's Larry.
Okay.
And the other kid is
the short kid.
Okay. Yeah. Yes, you're right. Larry is in
He's fired up. He's had some great credits, actually.
It's weird to see him.
He's very funny.
That's really all I got. I mean, like,
I think I'll punch. Yeah, I think I'll equal opportunity punch Linda Footy, though, Mike.
The fucking build up to this whole thing, though, is so brutal, dude. Like, he's like, okay, everybody, pop quiz. You know, he's just so stoked and gets like chocolates and everything to the crummy hotel thing. And just waits and waits and waits. And like, you kind of like, and he's got the walk of shame after he's like, you know, hours have passed. But then he gets home, grabs a Pepsi, and just like the slow, like he hears the baby cry, the slow peek, and they're both just there waiting. It's so fucking brutal.
Oh, yeah.
It's amazing. Because
you know, this is what happened.
Oh,
even on your first watch, you're like, oh, shit. And he should know that too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He should know, maybe we don't go home tonight.
We're not, yeah. Like,
maybe we call home. Maybe. To be like, hey, what's going on? I'm sorry I'm late.
Well, I love movies where like the movie figures it out, or like the audience figures it out as soon as the character does, you know?
Uh-huh.
Like you kind of have a feeling, like maybe he had a feeling. But then like you hear that baby cry and you're like,
we don't have a baby.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're trying to have a baby and it's his fault that they can't. So it's even more burning.
Yeah. And that's I think that's probably the toughest part is I feel like as the audience, you do know kind of going into that with as much, you almost know it right as you see how much effort he's putting into it.
Yeah.
You're like, you know, this isn't going to end well. What you're saying. Yeah. It's not going to end well.
And then it just, this is like this part where it devolves for McAllister. I mean, he gets stung just to show how bad it really is. Just get stung in the face. Ow!
Jesus.
That
fuck.
Ow, Jesus fuck.
His reaction to the bee sting is amazing. Like, even though, like, upon first watch, I was like, that's a little hokey, or like, kind of like, eh. But then I'm just like, that's hilarious.
That's how you would react.
Yeah. Oh,
Jesus. Did I just get stung in the eye by a bee? Like, that's.
Like, this is what's going to freaking happen right now? Right now?
Yes. This is the getting kicked while you're down. I mean, it's. And then for him to actually sleep in his car outside of her house because he knows he can't go home.
Yeah.
I read that he actually peed against that tree. That was actually peeing on the tree.
Yeah, I read that too.
That's amazing.
Which is so awesome. He's just like, fuck it, I'll just pee on the tree.
I had to piss. I had to go do a tech. They wouldn't let me go.
God, dude.
One more thing I wanted to bring up. Did you hear that Tammy was supposed to be played by Thora Birch originally?
Yeah.
Oh.
I would have liked that a lot.
Tammy, yes. I do really like, is it Jessica Campbell?
I think that's who it is.
She's really good in it, but Thora Birch would have been really good too, yeah.
She, and this is the time, this is what, 99? When was American Beauty? 2001. So this is like pre, and she was perfect in American Beauty. Mm-hmm. So I just think she would have played that angsty teen really well.
Very sure.
Sure.
Yeah, I like the braces of Jessica Campbell. That is, it's a really good touch.
All right, well, let's go on to the final scene. So Jim oversees the ballot counting and decides to throw two ballots in the trash to make Paul appear to win. It's announced at the assembly, and Tracy's broken. Jim goes to stay in a motel. Returning to school the next morning, it turns out the janitor has found the missing ballots. He resigns from his job, and it becomes a nationwide story. Jim moves to New York. Tracy is class president and then goes to Georgetown. Paul goes to Nebraska. Jim and Tracy have one last encounter.
I love the whole buildup too, like, because this whole movie's building up to the result of this election. You know, everything's
the movie's called Election Man.
Like, yeah, it's culminated to this moment. You know, and it gets everyone's perspective the night before, and it's Jim, like, his whole life is literally just come crashing down. But then you get, you know, Paul, kind of
his life's prayer. He goes, Lord, forgive me for my sins, whatever they may be.
Whatever,
like,
because
he basically doesn't know. He can't tell you what he's done wrong in life because he's like, I'm sure I have. I just don't know what it is.
I love
my friends, my talent. From what I've been told, a big penis. It's so innocent the way he talks about this.
Even
stuff.
Tracy Sue's like, make me president because I deserve it, and Paul Metzler doesn't, as you well know.
As you well know.
Love that.
I know you already took care of, like, this thing.
Like, it's been bestowed upon her.
Yeah.
By God.
You already took care of Tammy, so, like, and I appreciate that in your divine will. It's like, now you just need to do the one last piece and get rid of Paul. It's just like, God, you entitled bitch.
I love McAllister comes into and she's already there. Obviously, he's got the swollen ass fucking eye, and he's just chomping away at that cupcake like, fuck it all. You know,
his health has declined, right? He used to eat healthy and work out, and now he's just like eating a cupcake and looks like
smashing
a slob.
It. Yeah. And it's, they say, like it looks like some of them say pick fuck.
Yeah, pick fuck.
Because, like, some of them are just like poorly put together. The L and the I kind of roll together, and it just makes me think, like, he did pick fuck, and he got the end of that. Like,
you pick fuck, you get what you deserve, bro.
Yeah, unfortunately, he did pick fuck.
Are you guys? How do you feel about Larry Fouch?
Larry Fouch.
Do you feel sorry for Larry Fouch, or are you on team Larry Fouch? He's the overachiever kid that's like, well, wait, what's up? Like, we're supposed to do it this way.
I am team Larry because I think this is like gaslighting to a T. Think about how detrimental this could be to a kid who is trying to do the right thing. And it's not even that Larry Fouch is like an overachiever. He's just like a part of the student government. In my mind, did they say he's like an overachiever?
I think it comes across that way, and it annoys me personally, but I do agree with you in the long run. Yeah.
Like, he's McAllister's ruining this guy's, like, this guy has positive hopes about what political system
maybe
will be.
Maybe he stayed up.
That, his credibility and stuff.
Yeah, maybe he stayed up that night to do, like, homework or work on this, you know.
And he has a positive view of the political system of, like, wow, this is so great, checks and balances. Mm-hmm. And then only to be basically proved that, like, it's all fucking bullshit.
Yeah. And that's what I mean. Like, he counted this, right? He counted it. It's a real squeaker.
And he probably did it multiple times because he... To stand up against authority.
Correct.
Yeah, yeah.
To be that sure, to be like, no. I know how many I counted, and that's how, and this is wrong.
Well, dude, also, I like what you're saying because, like, maybe he does kind of know there's a lot of stupid ass fucking corruption, and like, maybe even McAllister.
But
even,
not at my school, bro. Yeah, not Mr. McAllister.
Well, exactly. Like, this one we can control because I'm in control.
Yeah.
You know, like, yeah. He just got disenchanted right away.
And that's what I mean. Like, that's how much it would affect him to be. I counted it. I double counted. It's a squeaker. Like, it's
a squeaker.
It's why one, Mr. McAllister, it's a squeaker. He's like, I got Tracy by one vote. And McAllister hears this and immediately thinks,
I could change this.
I can fix this.
And I don't think he was going to.
No.
Until he sees her fucking face.
You're right. It was that.
And it was the one little thing's like, yep, I'm going to affect this.
Freeze frame of her jumping and shit.
And again, taking it to the point of, like, to the principal's office. Nope, I got it here too. And Larry is so staunch and standing strong on this. Like, he's standing up not to just Mr. McAllister, but to the principal too and everybody, and saying, I counted it, I know it. And they, and in the end, they tell him he is wrong.
Yeah, he's like, hey, and you're not saying what I think you're saying now, are you, young man?
Yeah, exactly. They kind of threaten him on that level.
I like that.
Of just strictly authority.
Yeah, and so that's, this kid's like, hey, he's never going to go into politics ever. He's like, that's it for me. I'm done.
That's an incredibly, like, that's a traumatizing thing to do to a guy, especially if it didn't come around to be fixed.
And it's so subtle because there's two interesting things. Like, number one, Tammy would have won if she was not disqualified. Like, did you catch that? That there was 290 discarded votes.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That people still
did
voted
not
for
catch
her.
That. That's cool.
So she still won the election, even though she wasn't on the ballot.
So no one gives a shit in the end.
No.
Is what that says.
They crossed her name out and people were like, nope, still voting for her.
Yeah. Or they called them throwaway votes or something, whatever. Or like, yeah. But you know that's what it was.
And then also, like, I love that they show Paul being so nice and voting for Tammy, Tracy. That there's your flip right there. Like, if Paul wasn't just such an idiot, Paul wins by one vote.
Man.
Paul wins by one vote, and this none of this happens.
Yep.
Paul wins by one vote. The count's in. Larry's like, wow, Paul's winning in a squeaker. And he's like, wow, that's great. I'll double check. Yep, one vote. But Paul doesn't know how things work. Like, well, I guess I should vote for the other person.
Moral of the story, guys, vote for yourself.
Yes.
Yeah.
You're 100% right. I mean, that is the one vote that, and I actually love that. We always talk about that. You always heard about that. Every vote counts. Every vote, every single vote, you know, you vote with your heart. Do this. Make sure you do it. It's your right. And
there it is.
It's the
and your
one
vote,
vote
did count, bro.
That it came down to. Oh, man. Yeah.
The Jarrett layoff confused breakfast actor database. Do you know of all the actors in this movie, who's been in the most movies we've done?
I want it to be Chris Klein, but...
Chris Klein is three. This is his third. We got American Pie, Just Friends.
Okay.
There's an interesting one. The vice principal is Matt Malloy.
Oh,
he
okay.
He was in Armageddon in Role Models.
Yeah.
But there's someone that's been in four movies. You know who it is, or do you want me to give it to you?
Oh, Colin Camp.
There it is.
Yes.
Colin Camp, Clue, Wayne's World, Last Action Hero, and this. Like, that's moving her up the list, man.
Yeah, wow.
It's interesting.
Dude.
But she really gives us a little bit more now, too, when you're seeing this, giving her the medicine and critiquing her about her posters and speech. Like, that's the thing we talked about. You don't realize what's going on sometimes in people's home life. And it does give you a little bit more perspective into Tracy. And you do feel sorry for her at this point, how important it was for her. Because she's genuinely upset that she did not win this thing.
Yeah. I mean, it's not important to Paul. And I think, honestly, even as an audience, we don't care. No. Right?
It became important to him because he's like, we could have a carnival and a Halloween. We could have a haunted house. And then maybe every Wednesday we'd have ice cream for lunch.
Well, and that is again the idea of this whole thing of so-and-so is going to do it anyways and nothing's going to change. But the idea that Paul ended up winning for that brief amount of time changed his perspective enough for him to be excited about making mm-hmm. what he considers real change in the school.
Right.
And we can have it go for like muscular dystrophy. Mm-hmm. And like he's just trying to think of charities to donate to.
He's stoked the fuck about it.
Mr. You know? McAllister's, he's regretting this now. He's like, I'd rather have Tracy every yeah. day than Paul.
You think so?
I think he is. I think he's like, oh my God.
But it's also like, kind of related to real politics for a sec, but just like the like lower level, because this was probably like, you know, doing a carnival and shit is probably doable.
Yeah, you never know.
On a lower local level, yes, that does work. But on a bigger one, maybe not a lot.
Yeah.
Can you help me out? What does it mean when he's saying, Paul basically says, if I'd won the election, I might never have gone to Yosemite with Greg and Travis. He's...
And then he goes, or maybe I'd be dead. And shit.
No, he says, I might never have gone. If I'd won the election, I might never have gone to Yosemite with Greg and Travis. Meaning, whatever happened at Yosemite with Greg and Travis was not good.
You said that he might not have gone?
Yes, he said, I might never have gone to Yosemite with Greg and Travis.
So going with
them,
something.
If I'd won the election, is that implying that something bad happened at Yosemite with Greg and Travis, or is it implying that he's glad he didn't win the election?
So he got to go to Yosemite.
Because then he ends it with, or maybe I'd be dead. Like, so I think he's saying that if I'd won the election, better things would have happened to me.
Yeah.
Or am I viewing this wrong? Like, I scoured the internet to be like, what happened at Yosemite with Greg and Travis?
I don't know. I didn't really think about it.
They don't say anything about it.
I do love those like little tidbits that do make you think that you can rabbit hole on. I think it's a funny thing though that he probably things would have been probably better for Paul if he had the opportunity to focus on this, because he says, I didn't get to play ball and I didn't get to be president. And then Lisa left me for my friend, whatever his name was.
Yeah.
But Paul just has a positive outlook on life.
He really does. Yeah.
Essentially. But maybe it would have been a much better thing for him to be able to focus on this politics thing.
Okay. That's interesting.
You know, and maybe he wouldn't have gone. Yeah. I think that personally, I do think that that's the case. And I also do believe that even though if Paul would have won and Tracy would have lost, she still would have gone to go and do the same things. The fact that she was a high school student body president did not affect her going and being
getting
in politics.
Into Georgetown.
Yeah. Going into Georgetown, yes. Like, it just didn't. There's no world that you can convince me that would have changed.
Yeah,
you're right. I mean, yeah, she would have just kept doing it and doing it and doing it until she won something or got somewhere.
Yeah.
I do love like the shot of everyone in the principal's office and he walks in and it's just like, oh fuck. You know?
Oh yeah, that moment, like he looks around into that door just like he does looking in
exactly
to his wife and Linda. He's like, oh shit moment. And it's probably just the same. I wonder if the same response. Okay.
Okay.
There was one thing that I forgot to mention though, and it was about how Tracy is editing like the photos in the yearbook and how she's like cutting somebody out of a photo.
It was Dave, I thought.
Is that who it was?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. So editing Dave out of the photo, the yearbook.
Yeah.
Oh man.
And dude, the cut to Dave, like, I wonder where Dave is right now. He's just like putting price tags on patio sealant.
It's like a True Value or something.
This is such a wild ending, man. Cause dude, like you see what happened to Dave for fucking up. And then you get a little more insight on like Mr. McAllister. Like he still views himself as like the victim in all this.
Sure.
Don't you feel like it doesn't seem like he learned anything. He's still the victim. Tracy was the reason why all of this happened. It's just so weird to me how he just doesn't seem like he's pretending like he's in this better place, but in reality he's not.
No, he wasn't happy, and he didn't realize it was because he was in the situation. It was the situation itself. It wasn't Tracy or anybody else.
Right.
But he views Tracy as like almost the reason.
Yeah.
Well, and then did you see the alternate ending, like the original ending? Did you watch it?
I didn't see this.
What did you think about it? Because I don't think that was the right call.
I don't think so either. I think it's interesting. I think because they kind of reconcile in the end.
Oh, really?
Yeah. They have like she shows up and like basically asks him to sign the yearbook, right? Yeah. Like,
and that's it.
And I really think that it's the more human and more like vitriol he has towards her is where it should have ended, like where it does in the theatrical version. But
yeah,
it's interesting. I like it.
Yeah.
I do think it ends kind of in a similar theme of maybe what I was saying earlier. It just sounds a lot of when you have Matthew Broderick, when you have Jim McAllister narrating, it sounds like a lot of him trying to convince himself that things are either better or worse, not his fault, like whatever it is, right? Like she ended up taking the house. I got the car. Great idiot. Sees Larry. Like, and Larry just spits on his car. That's
violent.
He's living in Jake and Elwood's apartment in Chicago. Yeah, yes.
Basically. You know, it's smaller than what I'm used to, but it's quaint. It's cozy. And
it's not. It's shitty.
Rent's, and sure, the rent's high. $15.50 in 1999.
What is it?
Oh, that's like $3,300.
Jesus, okay. Fuck.
Makes sense.
That's basically, it's almost double is essentially what it is. Plus utilities.
Yes.
That's how much it's like costing. And it's him convincing, and he's seeing another woman. She's great. He was convincing himself the same way of his wife at the time. It's just, he's never honest with himself. And I think it's totally a credibility thing. Like you're saying, like, how are we supposed to rely on any of these narrators when he's not even convinced of his own things.
Yeah.
You know, it's crazy.
And it's poetic. He throws a Pepsi at her at the end.
Oh my God. Yeah.
It's so good. Like it ends perfectly. I think
that I didn't even fucking gather that. God damn it. Thank you for saying that, because he throws it. It's a Pepsi. I thought it was a milkshake.
Yeah. I think it was a milkshake in a Pepsi cup or something like that. Yeah.
I love the way that this ends though. He sees her and it's this growing thing.
Another freeze frame on her.
Dude, and it's the honesty that he just keeps convincing himself that it's not there, and then he gets more and more honest. Who the fuck does she think she is? And throws that cup, and finally we get some honesty out of this man.
Yeah, exactly.
And then he runs off. Oh, my God. That's
well,
great,
we
dude.
Have dissected this with a modern eye. It's time to give it a modern day rating. We got to start with Sean. What do you think about this one, man?
I still love this movie, you guys. I think it's so smart. I think, you know, like I said in the beginning, of you start watching this and you're like, it's just another high school movie. But then, no, it turns into this like very frenetic filmmaking and very smart, you know, very callbacky in the way that it is. And I love Alexander Payne's movies. I will check out anytime. I can't wait to see his new one. It's also Oscar nominated. I love it. I'm going to have to say 7.8.
7.8 for Sean. AJ, what about you?
Oh, this is tough. I didn't end up looking back on my ratings, see where this might fit in. I do really like the movie for the reasons of, I do think it's a well put together movie. I love the acting. I love the storytelling of it. It's a very, very fun play on the unreliable narrator, you know, skew. Kind of genre, things like that. I really do like it. And the more I watched it, the more I came to appreciate it, you know? But in the end, it's also, I'm not going to say though that it's one that I'm going to revisit regularly, because in the end, it's actually kind of a heavy movie. Mm-hmm. You know, it really is. I do see this as like I totally understand why this is like a precursor to Glee, and why it falls in the same, you know, vein as like Heathers. And It's a very dark comedy, you know. This is borderline. It's like a safe version of like a Black Mirror story. It's kind of crazy. Of just watching this guy's life fall apart over the course of a week, because he can't get out of his own way, and because a janitor's kind of a cynical bitch. I really like the story. The acting is great. I think it is one of Chris Klein's best performances. Especially as a first performance, I would love to see this movie almost kind of remade today, in a way. Not saying like frame for frame, but just like a new version of it. I think it should exist if it doesn't already. I will give this movie a 7.35.
7.35 for the age. Yeah, I'm mad at myself for not giving it another chance over the last decade or so, because I just thought it was some sort of teen comedy or whatever, and it's not. It's a dark adult comedy drama. Like, it's just, it's brilliantly written, such great acting. It's awesome. I'm actually going to give it pretty high. I'm going to give it an 8.1.
Wow.
We got to go to Starling. So he says, watching this with a modern eye made me nervous. I did not want to observe this movie that I own on DVD, despite not owning a DVD player, and ruin it by looking too closely. What happened was the complete opposite. I've seen this movie every 3 to 4 years for the past 2.5 decades, but this viewing showed me an entirely different movie. Tracy always seemed like she was supposed to be the nemesis to Mr. McAllister. She tugged at his thread to completely unravel his life. He first loses his best friend, then his wife, and finally his job, and possibly his sanity by the very end of the movie. Will anyone ever stop Tracy Flick? Now, I see this movie as a story about what happens when two different men don't deal with their own inferiority complexes, but instead project everything onto a 17-year-old girl as if she was an adult pulling the strings of their world.
Yeah.
One treats her like an adult. He wants a relationship with her that he cannot have with a real woman, pretending to be the man he wishes others would see. He's a novelist. He's a musician. He can see your soul. The other treats her like an adult so he can vilify her and make her the scapegoat for his own life's inadequacies. He's a beloved teacher and a husband until this siren tries to destroy it through her own ambition. Both of their lives are blown up as a result of not learning to walk away from this teenage girl. We open with Mr. McAllister living a modern-day influencer's aspirational life, a sunrise workout, happy shower at the gym, despite being capable of doing all of this at home. We need him to see Tracy setting up unnecessarily early to start her unchallenged campaign. To him, Tracy has no challenges, but he does. Tracy makes a comment here that hits hard for someone like me, who was also a high school teacher. The idea that it must be hard teaching students every year who go on to become more successful than you. This would be the perception of a girl like Tracy. She's highly driven and ambitious, but lower middle class. Her life is fine, but she must work twice as hard as everyone else if she wants to move up. Her mother was a paralegal. She will become the lawyer, but not without sacrifice. She doesn't need to be popular in high school because she's never going to see these people again. Reese is playing Tracy as a young person who may sound intelligent, but she is still naive. She knows you think she slept with Dave because her father died when she was young, but she wants you to know it's really because he makes her feel safe and protected. Such a great line by the writer. The truth is, Mr. McAllister is an unreliable narrator. As he tells the story, everything he says is always the most thought-out and well-articulated hero's point of view. He starts by telling us how wonderful his life is, but that's a lie. He implies he can't let Tracy win president because she will be the Lolita who to threaten his marriage. Another lie. Later, we hear Tracy say that he couldn't even get his wife pregnant. I don't believe Tracy said that. That's just his version of that story. He needs us to dislike her. That garage band is an Easter egg to his and Dave's desperation for a different life. No hate on amateur musicians, all in capitals. But these two are playing and jamming to escape their mundane lives. They will always be in that garage. There's no chance of a stage. That is true. McAllister, as a teacher, never reported Dave for sleeping with a student because he couldn't lose the escape. Tracy did this. She ruined his life, and now he's going to ruin hers. The only honest narrator in this story is Paul Metzler. Mm. Chris Klein plays the most endearing jock of all time. Yep. Even in Just Friends, he plays the worst asshole. He's at his best playing nice, praying for Tammy, and being subliminally passive in a kick-ass life. He's lovable. This movie wraps with everyone being exactly where they would have been if McAllister had never intervened. Tracy's president, Paul's popular, and Lisa's doing the full Heather Graham boomerang, climbing the social ladder one person at a time. The only person who McAllister helped was Tammy, who we can only hope finally gets that girl-on-girl action she desperately desires in her new school. The final lie McAllister narrates is about how wonderful his life is in New York City, even suggesting he's still a teacher while leading tours at a natural history museum. Trust me, New York City is not the city to move to if you have an inferiority complex. I love having my eyes opened after watching this movie for 25 years. My rating have gone down otherwise, but this viewing just reaffirmed that this movie is smarter than just a high school movie, and I'm keeping my rating at 8.5.
Hell
lastly,
yeah.
RIP to Jessica Campbell, aka Tammy. She nailed that role. My best friend went to medical school with her after she gave up acting, and he would share little stories with me. She sadly passed in 2020.
Dang. Oh.
So, as a group, we are a 7.94, which is a pretty solid rating for this. That's going to take us to number 45 on the list all alone. That's just below Beetlejuice, The Thing, and American Graffiti, just above Blazing Saddles, Fargo, and The Princess Bride.
Damn.
Above Fargo.
Above Fargo, and Princess Bride, and Blazing Saddles.
Wow.
Saddles.
Blazing Saddles.
You guys want to watch Blazing Saddles?
You guys want to watch Blazing Saddles?
My dad still has it on DVD. Do you guys want to watch Blazing Saddles?
My dad has a podcast.
Do you guys want to come over and watch Blazing Saddles?
I don't. No.
Because we're moving on. Pizza.
We're not making fun
Mountain
of you anymore.
Dew.
Okay.
Fart jokes.
Well, we hope you enjoyed the episode. Thanks for being here, everyone. Tune in next week. We're diving into Rockstar, which has been let out of jail after its trial. And we're following that up with Snatch. Also, if you're new to the podcast,
it was a mistrial. It was never in jail, right?
I don't remember. Yeah, we'll talk about it when we get there. Go back this time last year. Fifth Element is the movie we did this time last year. That was a very fun episode.
You bet.
Nice. Heck yeah. Guys, thank you so much for joining us for this episode of Election. We really do appreciate you listening along. Make sure you're dropping on into that subscribe button or that follow button on whatever platform. Most people don't even subscribe to the podcast that they're actually listening to. So please do us that solid. Leave us a review. 5 stars is always appreciated, but tell us how you really feel. Confused Breakfast on social media, and by all means, look at us on YouTube, because you can see our faces. And when I look into the camera, deep into the camera, like your soul.
Okay. We've got faces. Go to confusedbreakfast.com as well to see the merch that we have. You can put some hats on your head where your face is. You can put some shirts on your body. You can put whatever there. I think we got stickers. Go to Not Your Father's Beer shirts to get some official Steve Kuzer koozies. Go to confusedbreakfast.com as well to see the ratings of the movies that we have covered on this show.
Yeah.
You can go back and see Fifth Element a year ago. See what we thought about that. See our ratings on that. Just check it out. Okay, bye. I love you.
Support our sponsors and join patreon.com/confusedbreakfast to directly support us. We are produced by Upload Media Group in Cedar Rapids. We got Craig back.
Craig's
on the controls.
Back. Craigers.
UploadMediaGroup.com, and we are on the Cloud 10 Network. Learn more at cloud10.fm. That's it for us. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.